Hi, everyone. I'm Eileen Frere, and this is the Business Exam Room podcast brought to you by The Company Doctors. With me, the founder and CEO of The Company Doctors, the business turnaround guru himself, Randy McKinley. Hi, Randy.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, in this episode, we're going to shine the bright light on the Business Exam Room table to look at how to motivate your employees. And this is something that can be challenging, I'm sure, with all of the changes, the stress, the uncertainty brought about by the pandemic, but it's something that's just so important, right, Randy? Especially for small businesses.
Eileen, you're so right. It is such a big deal. When you look at businesses today, there's really six big struggles. And one of the top struggles is motivating employees. When you look at it in the workforce right now, the labor participation rate is down to about 61%. So that's about 5 million less workers in the pool, and there's 10 million open jobs. So it's even more critical to understand how to motivate your employees. And one of the things that people don't realize is, well, it doesn't cost a lot of money to motivated employee. But first, I think you have to understand what it is to motivate employees. And it's something I think that will help you really quick is when you can take a step back. Is money the number one motivator? Not really. If you look at some of the surveys out there, career advancement, 32% left their job because there was no career advancement. The second thing was if you looked at just pay, it was only 20 to 22% of the time people left a job due to pay. Yet we think right now that we have to keep giving them more money. Now, you have to be competitive, naturally, when you're dealing with the marketplace. If the prices go up, you need to be somewhere in the middle. But does that mean you have to be the highest paid company out there to attract an employee or keep your employee? And the answer is no. Let me help you real quick understand and kind of give you the foundation of what motivates an individual. If you go back 70 to even probably 120 years, about 70 years ago, Maslow defined and broke out what he called the pyramid. And at the very bottom, and I think this will make sense to you because I'm going to make it as simple as I can. The very bottom of that pyramid is what he used to refer to as the psychological. And what that means is, hey, I need to stay warm. I need food. I need shelter. It is very simple. In other words, I need that to survive. And then as you moved up, the second thing that motivates a person, this is everybody, was a desire to be safe. And in other words, hey, we want safety, security. And that could be in the job. If they're always fearful of the job, well, you're only the second level up. They're going to go someplace else where they're safe. The third piece up is, it's interesting, is they want to belong. Somebody wants to belong. They want to be part of a team. They want to be part of something. So it's, you hear the term, it's a career, not a job. And that's kind of what that means. They want to be part of something. And then you move up to the next one, which is that the next level up is self-esteem. And you hear the term respect. That's self-esteem. People don't want to be someplace where they don't feel respected. And you'll hear us talk a little bit more about this, I think, later, the term respect and how to go deal with it. And you move up even more, then you're getting into cognitive needs, the need for knowledge and predictability. You know, this is getting past Maslow. And number six was aesthetics, the beauty, the appreciation. And then number seven was self-actualization. And number eight was the transcendent needs. If you go back to the original foundation, it's psychological, safety, belonging, and self-esteem. I think you can stop right there. That's about as far as you need to go. If you understand that and start thinking about that, you can make a huge difference in how to motivate an employee.
Now, I think too, just figuring out what your employees want, I would think that requires really good communication between your boss and your workers. That has to be a major factor. And I know that can't be easy. I know in the past I've worked at companies where the direct manager didn't really talk with any of the workers. And all of a sudden they want to do Zoom calls with everyone to see how you're doing. And it was pretty awkward. I mean, people were thinking there's an ulterior motive. Immediately they're thinking, you know, layoffs, what's behind this? So there just wasn't any trust there. So no one was really feeling comfortable to speak freely about what they would like to see. So how do you create an environment so people feel comfortable and feel open to communicating?
It's a great question. You'll hear the term manage by walking around. That's something they've used for years. And really what that means is it's something very simple. You're walking around talking to your employees. What an employee think? Let me put yourself in an employee's shoes for a second. If your boss only comes by and talks to you when you did something wrong, how would you feel? Probably not really good. And you're very fearful when that individual comes around. But if your boss comes by, walks over, checks on you, hey, how you doing? Good. Oh, it looks like you're working on that project. Great job. Thank you. And you do this over and over. This is, in other words, it's not a one-time thing. It's a multi-time thing. And getting back to your specific question, I think one of the problems with the communication or lack of communication is you're getting into the fear because of the way we're managing is we're not talking to the employee. We're we're only talking to them when they did something wrong.
So a lot of it is also getting to know the employee. I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned the walk around, because I worked at a place where the general manager would come down, I would say almost daily, and walk around, and he would talk to people. And I think he knew everybody's name, no matter what division they worked in. And I know that made a huge impact, because you would start talking about what you did over the weekend, or what, in his case, he was very interested in extreme sports. So you would get talking about other things besides work, so that when work issues did come up, it seemed a little easier. And that person, that general manager, seemed more approachable to be able to talk to them. I mean, it really did make a difference, just seeing that face-to-face contact, and that manager's taking the time to go and talk to, you know, his workers, getting to know them.
Absolutely. So let me give you a real life example. You know, in my past, I remember one of the companies I worked for had just taken over, and I walked into the building and walked around and said hi to the employees, and you could almost see the shock that, you know, okay, I'm a senior manager, I'm walking through here, saying hi to these individuals. But what was fascinating is I kept coming, walking back out there. I wasn't trying to go tell them specifically what to go do. I was trying to get to know them. And what was going on is I was creating what you would call a personal relationship. As I started creating the personal relationship, then I was able to ask questions. And as I started asking questions, I was actually getting answers on how to go fix problems. And one of the things I think you're getting into as a leader people miss is if you just start talking to individuals, think about your friends. With your friends, people that you trust, will you tell them intimate details to them? Absolutely. But if somebody you don't trust, are you going to give them any detail? Are you going to tell them really what's on your mind? And the answer is no. So going back, there was so many of the solutions to the problems in an operation. All those solutions usually come from the individuals that are out on the floor. And one of the things as a leader is you're trying to go make sure that you're getting the obstacles out of their way. Back to what we were just saying is the key to it is actually walking around talking to people, because you're creating a pattern. It's not talking to you about your performance. I'm talking to you about anything, and performance could be one of those items you're talking about. So think of the one Harvard study is how many times you create a new behavior, have to do something 21 times. You keep going out there talking to people, talking to each area, saying hi to the individual, trying to understand, hey, how's it going today? What's working here? What's not working? Then later, when you actually have to go deal with something where it isn't correct, is the employee nervous about that? No, because it's part of a normal conversation as you would have with a friend where you may have a slight disagreement.
I would think it would also make it easier to kind of negotiate or try to get them to change if there's something that they're doing wrong, getting them, if you already know them, they might be more accepting of what you're proposing because they've built that trust with you. They know that you're not going to make them do something that isn't for the benefit of the company.
Yeah, absolutely. Getting out there talking to the employee doesn't mean, you know, here's the term respect, and we're going to talk more about it later, but there's, let me give you a simple technique. And remember this, you can use this anywhere. Some people call it PEP, praise, educate, polish. You get into school, they used to call it praise, question, polish. I can make it easy for you. You can call it the three P's, praise, ponder, polish. And here's what it really means. Praise, hey, I like what you're doing. You notice I'm starting off with something that's a positive. I'm complimenting an employee. One of the issues that we have as frontline leaders, middle management, senior management, you walk into a building, I've been in probably 400 companies, and I'll stand there and I watch, and I'm like, guess how many times you hear somebody actually praise an employee? Very rare, and which is one of the problems. So when the employee, all they think is when you're walking up to them is I've got something bad to say. If you start off by praising them, then the second thing is, hey, I wonder, why are you doing it this way? And well, they will actually give you an answer if you have that relationship. Then the third thing is gets into, why don't you consider doing it this way? I think this will be better. So there's a formula to how you talk to your employees. If you can write that down, the three P's, take that into any business on the planet, and your performance will increase because the employee will actually feel better about when you talk.
Now, I know we've been talking about walking around and talking to employees and seeing them face to face, but I know one of the challenges obviously right now is many people are still working from home because of the pandemic. So how do you handle it and keep that communication open if you're not physically there? How do you stay connected?
You talk about communication, especially with the change with the pandemic. We've changed some of the mechanisms. Does that really mean we're changing communication, or do you still have to communicate? I think one of the mistakes that's going on is you'll see that people are doing Zoom meetings, and then these Zoom meetings, hour and a half. And then great, then somebody else has a Zoom meeting, hour and a half. And then somebody else has a Zoom meeting, and it's an hour and a have. And I was talking to one of my colleagues over at a bottling company. I was going, wow, you have 3 to 4 Zoom meetings a day. So you're in meetings 3 to 4 hours. And then the employees down lower, the middle managers are in meetings all this time. And some of that's because of the pandemic. So here's what you need to be cognizant of. Is it a matter of having long meetings? No. What you need to go do is have shorter meetings, and it's okay to have more meetings. If your meeting is only 15 to 20 minutes, then it's not putting a burden on the employee. And then now you can have more meetings, but you want to keep them quick because you're being respectful of their time. So, and what happens psychologically is when you get into this environment, everybody's separate. It's like, oh, wow, I have to have these long meetings to make up for the time that I haven't been with you. And the answer is no, the meetings need to be short. Just do multiple little short meetings, follow-ups. You're still, actually, you're increasing your communication, and then you're not burdening employees.
Now, when we're talking about motivating employees, I would think one of the things that we've noticed, especially because of the pandemic, is just having work flexibility. You have more people staying home, working from home, and they're liking it. They're not having to deal with long commutes. They're not spending time in their cars. They're getting things done, errands done at home, maybe the laundry done in between breaks, and things that they wouldn't normally be able to do if they were stuck in an office all day. That's got to be a motivator as well.
It is a motivator. There's positives that happen in everything in the world with pandemic that caused the world to have take a step back. Hey, we got to go do things a different way. And then people started to recognize, I don't necessarily have to be in the office to get things done. There is technology. The technology is so advanced now with, because you've got cell phones, you've got ways to go monitor your machines. You can go be anywhere and literally get stuff done. There is certain levels when you're getting down into manufacturing, certain things like that, where the employee has to be there. But a lot of the things that are up around that, there is flexibility and they can go do it from elsewhere. So it is a win. And with the environment changing so much, you try to build that in as part of your package to keep an employee motivated.
And one of the things I know you had mentioned about pay not being the number one thing that keeps people in a job, but some businesses are having some serious trouble right now finding workers, whether it's like the food service industry, people who are worried about returning to work and contracting the virus, or maybe just people who see that they can make more money on unemployment, so they're choosing not to work. But whatever the reason, I would think that one of the motivations to get workers to work is to offer a little more money. We're seeing some companies offering some pretty good signing bonuses just to get and retain employees.
To be fair, are the employees making a lot of money on unemployment with the federal incentives in there? And the answer is yes. But if you take a step back, the question gets into, is the money the number one motivator? Usually when you rank money in the top five, money is number four. Now, the question gets into is, are we competitive? One of the problems businesses are dealing with right now is the wages had moved so quickly just to be competitive. Say you were originally paying $15 an hour. You were doing pretty good for a laborer that was in your business, but then all of a sudden the wages around you spiked. Well, is 15 the right number? You know, you went from being in the middle of the pack down to the bottom 10%. So do you have to adjust the wage at that point? The answer is yes. The signing bonus will get somebody in the door. An increased wage will get them in the door. But the issue gets into is, are you going to keep the employee after you get them? And secondly, is, are they going to be motivated? Because when you look at some of the stats out there, there's a company will have employees, but every year there's probably only 33% of them are truly engaged in your business, which means if you look across the industries in the United States, businesses are losing anywhere from $900 to $1 trillion a year in productivity.
That's amazing.
It's a big number. And it's because the employee isn't necessarily motivated. They could be there. So great that you got them in the door, but are they really motivated? Are they caring about winning the championship and helping you get to your goal?
Right. Well, I think this is a good spot to take a quick break. When we come back, R-E-S-P-E-C-T, how respect is not just good manners. It's something leadership, as we mentioned earlier, as Randy mentioned, needs to really be put into practice. The company Doctors has a senior team with a combined 115 years of hands-on business expertise and includes a PhD, a marketing expert, IT specialist, a media PR professional, a former bank president, and Randy McKinley, a turnaround guru with more than 25 years of experience with Fortune 100 companies right down to mom and pops.
Better profits, reduced taxes, increased cash flow. Do you wish you could get results like that? Well, you can. To date, we've helped 68 companies and counting make more money with bookkeeping, accounting, business support services, and our best practices. How do we do it? Very simple. We are a team of business professionals who have run businesses. We are certified professional bookkeepers, which is rare, and business accountants and business turnaround experts. We use our proprietary tools to get a 360-degree view of your business, find ways so we can cut costs, add in secure virtual platform, key technology, all parts of bookkeeping and accounting can seamlessly be done anywhere and at all times. You can see we are the next level in bookkeeping and accounting for small and mid-sized businesses. Or maybe you need part-time, maybe you need full-time, something in the middle. We encourage you to do an A-B comparison for your own benefit. Also, regardless if you need bookkeeping, accounting, we want to help you make more money. Thus, we offer all businesses free of charge our 1 hour I Want to Make More Money business review. So we encourage you to go to our website, schedule your free 1 hour I Want to Make More Money business review. Go to thecompanydoctors.com, that's drs.com. Click on the appointment scheduler for a discovery call to learn more and let us help you get your business making you more money today free of charge.
Respect. It's not just being polite, but being respectful can mean more engaged, more productive employees. There have been past studies by the Harvard Business Review that found employers with the most engaged employees were more than 20% more profitable than those with least engaged employees. So that's a major issue.
I would agree, Eileen. Motivated employees is the trick. It's not just having people in the building. Have you ever seen a little league baseball team? It looks like they're playing together and they may not be the most talented, but wow, they execute and then they win. In a business, everybody has a part to play. So motivated employees means they're trying to go win the game. And you almost have to think of it as a team in trying to win the game. And the question gets into is, how do you win that game?
And that's that businesses are having difficulty with. You would think that being respectful of others would be pretty simple, but a survey by Georgetown University looked at 20,000 employees worldwide, and those surveyed ranked respect as the most important leadership behavior, yet more than half said they do not regularly feel respected by their leadership. So that's unfortunate. And I would think that building respect has to also involve acknowledging good work. That has to be important as well.
It is. So let me help you real quick in your business. Imagine there's two things in your business. There's the primary culture and there's secondary culture. This is every business. Here's what primary culture is. Primary culture is your rules, your regulations, what goes on. And the secondary culture is what really runs your business. And that's what happens when you're not standing there. So think about it this way. What people may not get is just by how you do things in your business as a leader, as a middle management, as a frontline leader or supervisor, a lead, how you do it will dictate that secondary culture. If you are only rude to an individual, what do you think they say to their friends? Wow, man, my boss is just rude to me all the time. I don't really care. I'm not going to go try that hard. And so what are they doing? Then you get this bad culture going on in the background. And then now you have to get rid of it. Now you have to stand there and feel like you're micromanaging the employee to get something out of it. Oh, by the way, he's actually outside looking to go get another job where he feels respected. Coming back to it, let me give you some simple ways to go manage your business, which will drive productivity and improve how people deal with you. There's 10 simple things. Say something. That's number one. Hey, if you see a bad behavior, all you got to do is bring it up and go, whoa. Hey, we don't treat each other this way here. Why would you do that? People want an environment where, remember, getting back to Maslow, I want something safe, secure. I want to feel good and I don't have to stress. And with bad things going on, as long as you bring it up, they're like, hey, somebody's making sure everything's okay. The second thing, this one's really complicated. Try walking around around and smiling. I walk into business all the time and I don't see anybody smiling. Would you believe people will reflect what you give them? This doesn't cost you anything. Number two, smile. I teach your managers to smile, teach your frontline leaders to smile, teach your senior leadership to smile. You should walk in and smile.
Something so simple.
Very simple. Here's the third one, which will blow you away. Have you ever heard of the term thank you? It's not that hard to say. Here, let me correct that. Actually, in a lot of businesses I go into, it is very hard for them to say it. They don't say thank you. And when they say thank you, it's only once in a blue moon for big things. This is the myth. Imagine you were dating somebody. You're out there dating somebody and you were only took them to a very fancy dinner. It was over the top, but you didn't take the time to give them a phone call in between. In between dates, you didn't take the time to have a conversation with them. You didn't take the time to respond to an email. You didn't take the time to text them. And then you're like, here, I want to take you to another fancy dinner and have a great time. The person will turn around and tell you, why would I hang out with you? You didn't even take the time to say hi or even respond to an email. Thank you. And what it means is recognize the little things, not the big thing. You walk by somebody, you go, hey, you're doing a good job. I saw that the way you put that on a CNC machine, the way you're putting that part in, that is the right way to do it. Well done. The fourth thing, be considerate. In other words, be respectful of their space. Here's a thing that when you get into frontline leaders, middle management, senior management, and you have to think about this, is be respectful of your employee. In other words, I'm having a meeting. Oh, here, you're going to come into my space. Well, have you ever thought of maybe going around having the meeting into their space, into their area? Try to be respectful of their world. That little detail of being respectful of their workplace, what they do, be cognizant of the time, and they're trying to get things done, then that manages the secondary culture. The next one I'll tell you, this is a really complicated one. Master the word, I'm going to apologize.
That's a tough one for some bosses.
It's very tough. And here's what I will tell you. A great boss will apologize to their employee. A bad boss will not apologize to employee. And I know this may offend some people listening to this. I don't care if you're a supervisor. I don't care if you're a middle manager, senior manager, or an executive. You must learn to apologize. And it doesn't mean you're weak. People have the myth that you apologize that you're weak. First, as a leader or a middle manager or a front leader, is to get obstacles out of people's way. So your first job is trying to remove obstacles, make their life better. Does that mean you're going to be 100% accurate in everything you do? Unless you're God, you're not going to. You're going to make mistakes. But if you're trying to do something and you recognize, then you tell them up front, I'm trying to do this. Here's what the goal is. And I may not be 100% accurate. So when it's not 100% correct, you go, I apologize. We got part of it right. I didn't get it all right. It's recognizing that. And then the employee will respect you because you showed respect to them. The biggest insult to respecting somebody, you always come in saying, I'm 100% right. And that's what you're saying when you don't know. And participate constructively would be the next one. That gets back to that phrase I was talking about, PPP. You praise, ponder, give them something to ponder about, and then polish. So there's always something somebody's doing good. Then there's an area they can improve on. You get them to tell you what they're thinking. And then the last piece is then you're filling in the gap. And then next one, this one may shock you, respond in a timely manner to whether it's to your supervisors, to your employees. Here's an issue where it shows managers do not have any respect for the lower manager. An employee sends an email to his boss and it takes a day for that boss to respond and email back to you. What did you just tell that employee? You're not very high on my priority list. I call that boss or I make a phone call. Doesn't respond to my voicemail until the next day. Let me give you a little hint. If one of your employees or somebody's calling, you should try to go write a rule down going, I want to try to respond within an hour. And guess what that tells an employee?
They're important.
They're very important. Did that cost you a lot of money? No. Does it mean you have to kind of manage your schedule to make sure, hey, somebody called me, asked me a question, whatever it may be, you respond in a timely manner. Say you're a frontline leader and you're dealing with an employee. Employee has a problem. Does that mean you have the answer? No. You tell the employee, say, hey, you know, I'm not for sure. Let me go research this and see what the best answer is, and I will get back with you tomorrow. And you know what the employee will do? Oh, great. Thank you. You're trying to solve it. Doesn't mean you have all the answers, but you gave them a timeline of what you thought it would take to be able to solve that problem. But what you did within a minute was you acknowledged what their question was, and that's what the employee wants. They want to be heard.
Now, what happens if it's, let's say you're delegating, you just don't have time yourself to answer, but you have your assistant or a secretary respond? Is that Is that good enough? Or should you yourself make that, even though you're stretched really thin, make the effort to make that call or email?
And if you think about what you just said, if I just told the employee, here, I'm going to hand this off to this individual over here. In other words, they get the impression that you blew them off. That would be an issue. And a lot of times, this is one of the most difficult things, whether it's a frontline leader, middle manager, is recognizing that somebody came to you with an issue. I'll give you a couple examples on how to handle it. So say there was an issue with an employee on the floor. They did not tell their frontline leader about the issue, but they came to you about the issue. And you go, hey, I really appreciate you bringing that issue up to me. And the first question is, did you discuss it with your supervisor or lead? Well, no, I didn't. Not a problem. Is it okay if I go review this with him so he can handle it? Because it would be appropriate for him to handle it first. It's inappropriate for me to take that from him, because then that's overstepping my boundaries. And what I'm doing is I'm showing respect to the lead and I'm showing respect to the employee. If I just took that and said, here, I'll just deal with it myself, I would disrespect the frontline leader, which happens all the time in business. So guess what happens? I created a cancer, that secondary culture. Now the frontline leader's, great, my boss just cut my legs off. Now that guy's looking for the job, going someplace else where it's like, hey, he doesn't show me any respect. And think how simple this is. Now these are fundamentals. This doesn't cost you a lot of money. These are teaching your managers, your supervisors, your managers, your leadership on what I would call the how to do things. Not telling you exactly what to do. I'm just telling you how to do it. And it's not that hard.
And employees, I mean, obviously really need to feel like they're part of the company. So, but should they be included in things like setting goals for the company? Or is that just something for management?
Let me answer that question in a couple parts. You know, you have, say, employees out on the floor, you know, they're working on a production line, they're working in or an area. They may not be involved particularly in goal setting. The leader of that department, I would want them involved. So, and then I'll talk to you about how that works in just a second. I would want them involved. I'd like to have the supervisor involved, middle management. And you go, why would I want everybody involved? Well, if you've ever played a sport, people want to compete. People want to know the things they've done made a difference in winning the game. Whether you played baseball as a little kid in Little League, you know, you may have fielded only one ball that whole game, but you threw the ball over, you threw somebody out, and you contributed, and you all got to go touch the trophy. It's the same thing in business. The thing that a lot of your small businesses forget is you need to approach it almost like you're competing as a team, and you want them to share. It's like, hey, here's a goal. Do you want to go share necessarily what my sales numbers are? Probably not. But you go, hey, you know, we're trying to go get X number of units out the door. And when you do that, then at the end of the week or at the end of a day, you can high five each other and go, hey, we did it. We hit that number. Great. We're going to have a potluck. Everybody bring something. We want to go celebrate our number. I'll tell you what people love even more is a trophy. It's, you go into people's houses. Why is it you walk around, you'll see pictures on the wall and you'll see things hanging up. Like you'll see somebody who went to college. Oh, wow. There's their college degree. Oh, wow. On this shelf. Wow. That's a cool trophy you got from this company. Yeah. You know, I had attendance, perfect attendance. It's over here. Oh, look at this. We won the most units at our bottling facility. Hey, we were part of the region award. Why would those be on the wall 4 to 5 years later after they were done? Because they're priceless. So the point of the story and the moral of that story is little things where you can go hand them, they can take it home so they can go share it with their family, their friends, and say, hey, I made a difference and we won something. What do you think you just did to that employee? You got to motivate.
Boosted them sky high.
Boosted them sky high. Absolutely.
Now, one of the things, performance reviews, you know, sometimes they're seen as a way to measure success and maybe improve engagement and motivate employees. Or is that in fact the case? Do they actually motivate or do they drive people into the ground depending on how the review goes?
Well, you walk into a lot of places. Tell me if this is not what you experience. Oh my God, I got a performance review coming. I wonder how I did. Okay. Well, that's a problem. That's not what a performance review really should be. Couple things. Performance reviews shouldn't be complicated. And secondly, it shouldn't be a one one-time thing. If you're talking to your boss and you're having conversations every day, do you think it's really difficult when you get to, say, the six-month mark? Hey, how are we doing? No, it's not that much. It's not that difficult because you already have an idea on how you're doing. Let me give you some simple tips on how you do a performance review. Most performance reviews, it's easy. I would scale them 1 to 5. Think of it this way: for whatever activity, 1 is poor, probably not good. 2 is fair, which means, hey, you're meeting some of the expectations. You're just not quite hitting them all. Now, here's the key. This is where everybody kind of makes the mistake in performance reviews. A 3 is like satisfactory or pretty good, which means you hit all your stuff. You're nailing all your numbers. Now, here's the trick to a 4 and a 5. Easy way to think. A 4 means, wow, I didn't just hit some of my numbers, but I'm helping other people try to get to their numbers. I'm jumping in and helping somebody else. I'm jumping over here and helping here, helping this person over here. Or I'm coming up with ideas on how to make things easier in that department or better. And a 5, guess what a 5 is? You're actually going out teaching the other departments, teaching somebody else that activity. That's how you get to be a 5, which means you're the teacher, no longer the student. Think of Star Wars. I just went from being the Padawan to now you're the Jedi Master. The easy way to think of it, 3 is outstanding. And then 4 is kind of going outside your area. 5 is, wow, I'm helping everybody else. Now you know a scale. So you tell your employees the scale. This is how I judge you. And then you can have what they call quantitative and qualitative. And all that means is, hey, some stuff is specific onto the numbers. You know, hey, we got X number of units out. That's quantitative. Qualitative gets into how you did something. So I'll give you a couple. This is a simple 1-page performance review for any manufacturing business. Productivity, 1 to 5. That's quantitative. Quality, which gets into how you did it. Are you promoting ways to improve? So how, and then you can rate it and you use that scale. Attendance, important, right? Then you get into following direction. You notice that there's several things in here. It's not just saying, hey, here's a number, but the other ones, it's about how you're doing something. You're focusing on the behavior or helping them manage their behavior in your business. Guess what? You made a better workplace and it becomes more consistent. Then there's safety. Then you have teamwork. So it's how you're working together. Remember, it's like a baseball team, the Little League baseball. Communication. How do you communicate? Listening. Did you follow company policies? And there was only 9 things I just mentioned there. There was only a couple of them that were very metric driven. The rest of it is, hey, it's how I want you to do something. And if you follow the scale of 1 to 5 and you're having communication with somebody every day, how hard is that? They're not going to be stressed over a performance review.
Right. Well, communication, it sounds like. Motivating your employees is just one of several pretty big challenges facing small businesses today, right?
Oh, absolutely. There's many more challenges. And in the coming episodes, the Company Doctors podcast, we're going to look at some of the other big challenges that are facing small businesses. As we started, you know, we touched motivation, but there's really 5 other big ones that are hurting businesses. And 2 specific ones that we really want to look at is finding and keeping good customers and paying attention to your overhead. And especially in the business world today, every dollar saved is really $10 in sales. So that is a big deal. So it focuses on what we really need and what we can do without. And those are just a couple issues we'll be talking about in the upcoming episode.
Well, definitely some very current topics. Looking forward to it. We want to hear from you. If you have questions or if you have an inspiring story, contact us through the Company Doctors website. That's thecompanydrs.com. Click on the charity link. And until next time, wishing good health to you, your family, and your business.
The information provided is intended solely for educational and cannot be used as a substitute for professional advice and or information, as circumstances will vary from person to person and company to company. You should not act or rely upon information without seeking professional advice. Do not attempt any of the suggestions, actions, solutions, remedies, or instructions discussed on this podcast without first consulting with a qualified professional. The materials are not intended to be, nor do they constitute actionable professional advice. Transmission of this information is not intended to create a professional-client relationship between the Company Doctors and you.